All right, so we are officially recording. So today's date is April the 20th, and this is our Mystical Monday teleclass with our special guest, Russell Scott, from Awaken the Guru in You. And, of course, myself, Monica Lumley-Piercy, and my partner here, Richard Fogg, up in Bancroft, and we operate Heart of Unity, and we do intuitive readings and channeling and healing sessions. And Russell also does some wonderful clearing sessions and is an international retreat facilitator, has been facilitating enlightenment intensives, now called the Coming Home Retreat, for a while now. And what else can I say about you, Russell? Singer, songwriter, poet.
Yeah, I'm an author of the book Awakening the Guru in You.
Yes, Awakening the Guru in You. It's an awesome book, and if you haven't got it, I would suggest visiting Russell's website, awakentheguruinyou.com, and have a look at the book. He's got there's so many materials on your website that are so worthwhile looking through, and so I encourage everybody, if you haven't already done so, to go ahead and have a look. And of course, Richard and I are heartofunity.com for anyone who we're meeting for the first time. Feel free to drop by and pay us a visit as well. And so, Russell, we're just absolutely thrilled to be having you on here. Both Richard and I, I've been to two of your Enlightenment Intensive retreats. Now Homecoming, Coming Home. And both times, I have to say, were very deeply profound. For me, they were, I don't often enough take the opportunity for my own, development, and that seems to be one of the things those of us in service do. We're so busy being of service that sometimes we forget to be of service to ourselves. And so both times where I stepped out and went to your retreats, they were just phenomenal. I couldn't say enough. About experience and how.
Well, thank you.
Someone. So, and I want everybody to know that Russell was coming up to North Bay and did several workshops up there with us, and at Heart of Unity. And it was Richard actually that introduced me to Russell. And Richard's done many Enlightenment Intensive retreats and even staffs them on occasion. So I think that's a pretty good lead-in. Russell's going to facilitate a discussion tonight on the fulfillment factor. And so I'm really excited and interested to see what we're going to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Russell, do you want everybody to be interactive, or do you prefer we all listen for a bit and hold on to our comments?
Well, I think, it might be good if we could talk a bit and then certainly get interactive.
Okay.
That might just provide a lot of material for people to ask questions if we just talk non-interactively for a while.
That's
and,
great.
And, I just have to say I'm just so pleased and excited to be on with you two. I respect both of you a lot and what you do, and I think this is just such a great service to get out and talk to people more about these subjects. I think many people are, coming out of the closet in many ways, being spiritual seekers, and there's a lot of us out there that really don't want to follow a dogma or a spiritual path, a religion. And it's we need a place for just us independent seekers to come together and talk and discuss, and I think this is a great thing you got going. I'm really pleased that you're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Russell. We're pleased to have you on as our guest.
Absolutely.
I'm ready to learn.
Well, I may say something that comes out of my mouth that I've never heard before, and I might learn too.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. Great. So, yeah. So, take it away, Russell. We're all ears over here.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'll just say a little bit about, you know, the kind of people that I work with and what my, you might say my mission in life. And I mentioned this already that, the, you know, the kind of people that I work with or that are attracted to working with me are, you know, the kind of people that I might label as the independent inquirers, the non-following seekers, the mystic misfits that show up at a mystic misfit party. So the kind of people that are, you know, they're not interested in, like, following a religion. You know, dogma kind of gives them a bit of a rash. And I think there's more and more people that are out like that, out searching that way. And, you know, some of them have hit a place in their life where, you know, maybe they're older and they've hit something in life that's got them reeling, has the, you know, their tires are spinning. You know, maybe they've had a loss of a partner or a job, or maybe just looking back on their life, and they start to ask, you know, like, what was this all about? What happened? You know, what happened to the wonderful life I thought I was supposed to live? So there's this question, you know, like, what is really going on here? And sometimes that's a lot of that is about, like, personal issues, you know, like, what's going on that my life isn't working to a certain degree. But there are those that ask deeper, you know, like, what's really going on in life in general? Like, what's this all about? What's the purpose of it? And who am I? Who's been living my life? Who's the one underneath it all that I, you know, I get glimpses of every once in a while? There seems to be this kind of light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe that light is me. And so these are kind of people I work with. You know, they're deeper questioners, and, you know, some of the fundamental questions that they have are like, who am I, or, you know, why am I here? You know, I often say that I'm the who and why guy. And so I help people find that what's true for themselves. I am more of a technique teacher. I teach techniques for people to come to their own experience of what's true, rather than provide answers. And I often tell people, like, don't believe anything I say unless it matches what you feel is true for yourself. And I think there's a lot more of us out there that are not wanting to be followers. You know, we want to look within and follow our own internal guidance. That's often a more difficult path. But in the end, it tends to be a much deeper path, because we don't settle for ideas and concepts. You know, we want to go to a deeper wisdom, a deeper experience of us experiencing life in its fullness, rather than, you know, have theories about life. We want to live life and be more engaged in life the way it actually is. You know, Woody Allen once said, you know, if you want to become successful in life, show up. And I think that's the real, you know, when I talk about the fulfillment factor, the real thing that I think for myself and that really fulfills us in life is being who, experiencing who we really are, and then living from the fullness of that in our life. So, you might say fulfillment is filling our lives with the fullness of ourself, filling our life with the fullness of our true self. And, you know, in the end, it's, you know, some people say, you know, what's the purpose of life? Sometimes we discover that it's very simple, that the purpose of life is to live it, and to live it fully. And that way we, with our full living, we get more experience of life. And with more experience of life comes more wisdom about what life is really all about. And that, what that really means is, if we want to live more fully in our life and be more engaged, one of the deeper questions then is, well, who's the one that's living? And why am I living? And so that really begs the question of this, you know, who am I? If we want to live more fully, then we can't be living from a false sense of ourself. You know, we need to be more living from who we really are. And it's certainly the case in, you know, relationships where the best relationships are the ones where we can not only be who we are really in our relationships, to be more authentic, but also to really contact and be engaged with our partner, our friends, the way they really are. And then we can feel more alive and more present and more whole and complete. So just starting off saying, you know, well, what is this fulfillment factor? What is it that fulfills our life? You know, to a certain extent, it is about being successful, getting what you want, achieving your goals in life. You know, whether it is you're a Gandhi or you're a, a rich, very rich person like, Bill Gates, whatever your version of success is, certainly achieving that will bring you happiness. But if you're not fully present in it, if you're not fully in your life, then the enjoyment isn't really there, you know. So I think there's two factors, which is, you know, being successful, but there's also this factor of fulfillment, which is really central to your own being fully engaged in life. And that can only happen if we know who it is that's engaging in our lives. So I think that's the, you know, the one message that I wanted to give, that fulfillment is really about showing up more in your life, being more present as who you really are. And what that means, to be able to do that, is to awaken to your true self and to live from that in your life. And then, therefore, life automatically becomes fuller. So I'm going to pause there and see if, you know, you or Richard has any questions about anything that I've said or comments.
Richard's looking like he's got something on the tip of his tongue.
Still on the tip, though, so I'm going to be a moment. Maybe Monica.
Yeah. Well, you know, in a way, you know, I love that image, you know, like living life as if it's on the tip of our tongue. We never know from one moment to another what's going to come around the corner. And so there's always this unknown about life, and often we feel afraid of that unknown. But I think the more we realize that there is this unknown, you know, we're living life on the tip of our tongue, and be willing to just embrace that. Kind of on the other side of the unknown, which we might be afraid of, is there's wonder. There's a deep curiosity of what life is really all about. Like just today, I sat in my sunroom and have these seedlings growing for my garden. And sometimes I sit in there and meditate. And I just decided, well, maybe my meditation will be today just sitting with things the way they are. You know, rather than doing a meditation technique, you know, focusing on my breath or, you know, inner light or body sensation, I just decided, oh, I'm just going to sit here and just be with these seedlings. And you know, it was like a marvelous experience. Like, it was just this sense of, I just allowed this childlike inner sense of wonder and curiosity to be there. And I just realized how much I really didn't know. I really didn't know a lot about, like, how is it that these plants grow? And what is it that, you know, what is it like to be a plant? What is like it like to have the consciousness of a plant?
Mm.
And what is it that they're fulfilling? Mm. You know, do they have a sensation? Is it possible for me to communicate with them? So there's this giant, all-unfolding sense of wonder that came out of that, and it was just like marvelous. And I guess what I'm saying is, if we let that unknown in our life be there occasionally, just let it be there instead of being afraid of it, and just sit with it, then on the other side of it is this this marvelous experience of. A deeper reality that's more spacious and open and full of brightness that that we may not see in our daily kind of routine of you know, facing the grind every day. There's so much wisdom and wonder and miracle in our everyday experience. And if we can kind of interact with that or relate that from the fullness of ourself, it becomes much more, in a way, glorious.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
So thank you, Richard, for having something on the tip of your tongue.
Well, it certainly led to a delightful exploration.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Part of what I really... like in what you brought up in the earlier part was this aspect of perhaps the purpose of being here, the purpose of life is to live it most fully. And you know, I find that it's very easy to get focused on why am I here as a goal, as something that is to be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
And, that tends to keep us, and I've certainly engaged in that, and am not past it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Focused on looking outward,
mm-hmm.
and a mode of comparison with others, mm-hmm. comparison with where we think we should be,
mm-hmm.
and. I tend to feel it ultimately breeds a certain sense of dissatisfaction because, in my estimation, you know, most people aren't where they truly want to be or think they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like when Wayne Dyer made the comment, he was asked after one of his talks, and there were a thousand or more people there, a reporter asked him, how did he think that he was received? What did he think that people thought about his talk? And he said, I have no idea. And the reporter was rather taken aback, somewhat shocked, and said, well, you know, don't you care? He says, of course I care about all these people, but it's not my responsibility how they receive me. It's only my responsibility to be true to myself and deliver the best that I can. Beyond that, it's none of my business what they think of me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, don't you have some concern? Maybe they won't want you back. He said, well, then they won't ask to have me back. It's pretty straightforward.
Mm.
And just that whole thing, in one of his other talks, he said, I haven't had goals for years. He says, I understand why I'm here, at least at that point in his life, and he said, that's exactly what I seek to do, is to fulfill that purpose. I don't need to place a goal out there in front of me where I'm not,
mm-hmm.
because it only leads to a sense of being dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's a really interesting question. You know, is there you know, is there a purpose to life that we can be working towards and aspire to? And I think there's a yes and no answer there, and I think it depends where you put your focus. So, you know, the question is, you know, is there a purpose to life in general? And then there's the other question, is there a purpose to my individual life? And yes. And there actually is, like, you know, there's this purpose of life in general, which certainly is addressed when I said, you know, the purpose of life may be just to live it. But I've also discovered for myself is that there is this overriding purpose of life, which is just to become more conscious. That in everything we do, whether it's a difficult experience or a wonderful experience, or we suffer or we, you know, have happiness or an exalted experience, in anything that we're doing, there's always this development of consciousness. You know, we're becoming more conscious of ourselves, we're conscious of others, conscious of life. It's inherently going on in life, and when you recognize it, you realize, oh, yeah. Even if I don't want to become conscious, you know, I'm becoming aware of the fact that I have this ability to not want to become conscious. So it's like we don't have a choice to do that. And this is kind of the overall purpose of life. But I think we also have, each one of us has an individual purpose, or a mission, you might say, in life. And for many of us, it's very unique. I shouldn't say for many of us. For all of us, it's unique. And, you know, for some people, that purpose may be, you know, I just want to express my love to people. Or it might be, you know, I want to experience the full potential of myself. Other people's purpose may be that they just want to serve others. Like for myself, you know, the point at where I am at is, you know, my purpose in life is to help people find what's true for themselves and live from their true self and according to their real purpose in life. So that's my purpose. Now, it may evolve to be something else a few years from now, but that's really it right now. And that may be not somebody else's purpose. And when people discover their own individual purpose in life, the interesting thing is they realize that they've already been doing that. And so it's not like it's something to, you know, to aspire to achieve at some time later in life. They realize they've already been engaged in that. But when they discover it consciously, when they realize, ah, yes, this is what my life is all about, something really shifts in them. It's like all of a sudden it's like the compass points north. Mm-hmm. You know, they become aligned in their life. They say, ah, yeah, this is the direction I'm going. Mm-hmm. And they start to realize that, you know, it's like everything in my life is about that. It's like this is the underlying context. And what happens is this new energy comes out of their being. They this is what my life's all about. And, you know, they don't have to take protein powders and B vitamins and, you know, all these caffeine drinks to give them energy. It's like their energy just comes out of themselves to naturally want to accomplish that purpose. The other thing is that finding one's individual purpose is the benefit of that is it becomes this kind of standard or this context in which to make decisions in life. So let's say my purpose is to just, you know, to bring more love into this world. You know, then, you know, let's say I have to go to the store and I feel like I want to, you know, buy some corn chips or you know, some good food. And so I can ask myself, well, which of those choices would allow me to bring more love into the world? You know, and sometimes it might be, well, the corn chips, because I'm inviting some people over. Or it might be, well, you know, I've had too many corn chips. You know, I need to buy something else. The other third thing that's really neat is we discover that it's not only our purpose, but it's a calling. It's like the world needs that purpose. You know, it's like the individual gift that we have that the world needs, and it's unique to us. But the world needs it. It's like everybody else in life wants us to accomplish that or to be in that trajectory or that dynamic. So we feel more at one with life when we discover that purpose. So, you know, basically I'm kind of saying is that yes and no, it's kind of like when you discover your purpose, it's more like you enter the current of your life, and it's not something far away to accomplish. It's something that you're already being successful at and you're already working for. But then there's this overall purpose of life, which is it's going on no matter what we're doing, and you know, certainly it's about living our life fully, and it's also about living our purpose. And you know that's some of the work that I do. So I do work with people one to one in my coaching and helping them find their life purpose. And I think it's a major, major accomplishment in life.
Mm-hmm.
There's two major accomplishments in life that I think are really important. Finding out who you really are inside,
mm-hmm.
awakening to your true self, so who, and then why. So, you know, who am I being in this life, and why am I being in it? And to me, it's a real tragedy. It's a real tragedy for people to, you know, leave their life, and they don't know why they were in it.
Yeah.
And they don't know who was living it.
Absolutely.
To me, that's a real tragedy. And most people in life go to their deathbed realizing they never answered those two questions.
Eckhart Tolle makes an interesting comment around that. He says, reincarnation doesn't do you any good if in your next life you still don't know who you are.
Yeah.
So basically,
there's a Zen master, Dogen, he said, to have lived your life and not to have realized your true nature is to have lived in vain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty severe.
Yeah.
Pretty severe, but you know what? It's true. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, and you're right about the life purpose thing. When I'm doing intuitive readings with people, that's one of the areas that I find there seems to be some common areas that people want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
But with me, that's one of them in my readings, is people are wanting to know, what is my purpose? It's like whatever it is they're doing, they're feeling unhappy in it and are feeling like I'm supposed to be doing something more here, and I wanna do more. It's like light bulbs start going off for them.
Mm-hmm.
They sort out what is that more, and it kind of you had given me some points on this talk that I put in the email and everything, and so this is kind of leading me into the question. Based on your point, it says why the pursuit of happiness will eventually make you unhappy. Because people...
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, people equate purpose with, you know, if I'm fully on my purpose, I'll be happy, or if for some people it might be if I have more things, I'll be happy, and I just want things that make me happy.
Yeah.
And this is the pursuit of happiness will eventually
yes.
make you happy. So I'm very interested in exploring that with you.
Yeah, well, let me respond to that. That's a, You know, that's something that I kind of realized, like, a number of years ago. And I was thinking about the Declaration of Independence, you know, for the United States, you know, that enshrined in the Declaration of Independence is the pursuit of happiness. Yet, a lot of the studies of what we might call the happiness index in the world, you know, they did this study of what countries are the happiest. You know, they had all these factors that they judged it against. And the United States was way down on the list.
Oh,
yet, yet they had, you know, it's enshrined in their constitution, the pursuit of happiness.
Yep.
And, you know, my view on this is that happiness is the result of something. It's a byproduct of something. So, you know, when we achieve a goal in our life, we are happy, you know. Or, you know, as we see that we are making progress towards a goal, we become happy. And so it's, you know, it's a byproduct of either achieving a goal or, you know, recognizing that you're working towards a goal. The other deeper thing of that is that when people find out who they are, they awaken or they become enlightened to their true self or their true nature. What they find out is that they're already happy.
Yes.
That when we reside in our true nature, when we reside in who we really are, and people often find this when they become awake to themselves, or they go into deep meditation, they find that just being in contact with their true self, happiness is already residing there. It's inherent in our true nature. You know, when we are at one or in harmony with the nature of things, we're happy. You know, it's like when we're in the forest and we're sitting in the forest and we're just really communing with nature, you know, we become happy. And it's not something that we attain or, you know, go after and try to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a, you know, look at it this way. It's like, you know, a dog is just a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And if a dog is desperately trying to be a dog, when it already is a dog, it's going to be a neurotic goal. It's going to make that dog unhappy. So it's like trying to be something that you already are.
Uh-huh.
Makes you not who you are.
Well, you know.
So, so this whole idea of pursuing happiness is a bit of an error. And in fact, if that was the real goal of life, then why don't we just take drugs? You know, take drugs and be happy.
I think
if that was the goal. So,
I think some have.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know,
so it's really the byproduct of something else, and it's an error to try to achieve it. And the other thing I want to say about that too, actually, yeah, is that there's a lot of suffering in life, and there's a gift often in our suffering. You know, when we oftentimes we suffer because we're taking an erroneous point of view in life. We're trying to do something that we can't really do in life, or we're having an erroneous idea about ourselves. And when we have a different point of view that's in error, then we'll start to suffer. And oftentimes in our suffering, we'll wake up to the error and we'll have this insight and we'll have wisdom that comes out of that suffering, which then will help us lead a more conscious life. So if we think we have to be happy all the time, then there's this whole side of life where there's wisdom that we won't be being nourished by.
Yeah, it's very detached.
Yeah.
What I found interesting about that is, and it's written into the American Constitution, the pursuit of happiness. Everyone has that right to have the pursuit of happiness, I'm glad you talked about it in the way you did, because I was thinking along the same lines, and I was interested to explore it with you. But when I looked at that statement, why the pursuit of happiness will eventually make you unhappy, it's because you're always in pursuit of it. You're doing,
mm-hmm.
and there's a difference between doing and being.
Yeah.
And so pursuit is like you're always looking for it, and it's never there. The very statement itself,
that's right.
The American Constitution has set the entire population up for failure.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, sometimes happiness is just a choice.
Yeah.
You know, we can decide in whatever moment we're in to just be happy.
Yeah.
And you know, I have. One of the things that has been my kind of challenge in my life is depression. I can get depressed, and there are times where I'll just say, okay, Russell, just be happy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just get into the state of being happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll get into the state of being depressed. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'll choose. I'll actually choose to get into these different states.
Mm-hmm.
And it shifts it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's lots of times where, you know, we can just decide, okay, it's tough right now, but I'm going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great exercise for anybody to try. You know, I dare anybody listening to choose to be happy and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I find there's a number of aspects that have come up for me while you're talking. One is that the whole idea around happiness and unhappiness, for me, it's as when we're outwardly focused, then it's all about things. Is this happening in my life? Is that happening in my life? If this is happening, I'm unhappy. If that's happening, I am happy. So then it's a constant back and forth, because the experiences that are unfolding, the events that are going on, the experiences we have in relation to those events are constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
The entire idea of, oh my God, it's bad when I'm not happy, when the focus is outward, it becomes a frustrating journey.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening quite a bit to Muji, and he talks about one of his teachers who, one had a gentleman who said, you know, I really appreciate the talk you've given, and I feel I understand it, but I have one disagreement, and that is, you know, you speak of suffering as being something that actually transpires internally, but he said, in my case, I have to disagree that, you know, I'm constantly experiencing suffering. And he said the speaker immediately spoke up and said, no, you're suffering, you're experiencing. So in other words, he's simply experiencing, but he's in a mode of suffering, so then all his experience becomes a suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, bring attention back around to the suffering doesn't come from outside. It's how you are experiencing, which I totally appreciate it in my own case and possibly for many. It doesn't seem like we have a lot of choice sometimes about the manner in which we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes we... I think it's our culture, you know, we think we have to be happy all the time. And so if we're unhappy, if we're suffering, there is something wrong with life, or there's something wrong with us.
And look at all the drugs.
And, you know, so we tend to not only experience suffering, which is what goes on in life, like this is something we can't avoid, especially if we're outwardly focused. You know, we think our happiness is going to come from outside ourselves, because everything goes through a cycle of gain and loss. You know, we have the great meal, and, you know, it's like wonderful, and then after that, it's gone. You know, it's the taste is gone. And then there's long-term things that we gain. So, you know, we have this wonderful car for about 5 or 6 years, and then it starts to rust, and the brakes go on it, and the transmission.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty soon we, you know, like, what did I buy that for? And so we suffer. So there's always this gain and loss that goes on in life. And so we're going to suffer. And if we think that we shouldn't be suffering, then what happens is we resist it. And that resistance actually adds more suffering to our suffering, because we're not allowing that experience to flow. Any experience that we have in life, if we look at life, things are always changing, things are always flowing, experience is always coming, it's always going, and if we resist our experience, we're actually stopping it, and we're actually causing ourselves to continue to stay in that state of non-flow or of pain and suffering. But if we let it flow, if we instead of like trying to overcome it or have it be in any other way, let it be the way it is. It's like a friend of mine once said, you know, there's no getting over things, there's no getting under it, there's no getting through it. All there is getting it. You know, just let it be the way it is. And if we can accept and be with our experience, then what happens is it starts to flow. And it'll reach a climax, you know, but then it'll start to dissipate. So, you know, if I am feeling sad, you know, I let myself feel sad. And, you know, I may cry, I may go into grief, but I try to stay open to it. And what happens is it reaches a kind of crescendo where I feel like, oh, I don't know if I can handle this. But if I let it be there, it will start to subside and it will flow. And also, our suffering tends to work towards a resolution. It will tend to go to the place where it will resolve itself. And once it starts to resolve itself, out of that will come new wisdom or new understanding or new insight. I'm sure many of you have had the experience where you've just let go, and then all of a sudden, on the other side of that letting go, you realize, ah, that's what this is all about. Ah, yeah, that, you know, and that new wisdom then gives us a greater capacity to live our life more consciously. Mm-hmm. It's like one woman once said on one of my retreats, she had this realization about life, and she said, you know, life is like school, only you get the test first, and then you get the lesson. But that is so right on. You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah. We do a lot of suffering by resisting our suffering.
Yes. I would agree.
But on the other side of suffering, when we get through it, when we let it flow, there's always new consciousness. There's always new wisdom that comes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm like for myself, you know, once I've gotten through some difficult times in my life, I've never said to myself, I wish that never happened. You know, I've always said, you know what? I didn't realize it at the time, but that needed to happen because now I know this.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing this now allows me to live more fully in my life than I was able to before.
Yeah.
I feel one of the differences in terms of the impact with individuals is whether there's an immersing in the identified self, what some call the ego, or whether there's a trans transcending of that aspect and going deeper. Eckhart's one of the ones who talks about, he's spoken with a number of the people who came through Auschwitz in the Second World War.
Yeah.
He said many of them felt that they were basically destroyed through that experience. They lost everything. And they never recovered from that. And then he says he's encountered a few who were completely transformed through that loss of everything. And it seems to be the aspect of accessing something of a within that's of a deeper nature that
mm-hmm.
and some do and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
And those who stay more outwardly focused, then you know, their suffering becomes, it seems like, a kind of a motif in their life, and it's everything is now perceived through those eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a point where Muji talks about one of his teachers again saying, in response to a question from one of the students, that he said, "You have to be a somebody to be unhappy."
Mm-hmm.
When you're a somebody, you're automatically happy. When you have mm-hmm. no identity, then happiness is automatic. You don't have to. You don't need to seek it. You don't need to try to be happy. You are happy.
Yeah.
But it's the whole aspect of having that identified self that seems to be one of the key components. So, you know, here the media, and I'll say the mass consciousness in a general sense, seems, at least in the West, seems to be always pointing toward happiness is being externally fulfilled
mm-hmm.
through people, through experiences, and yet it seems that's actually the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, it's like there's, you know, our culture, our Western culture has kind of created this disease, and it's called the disease of not good enough, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's constantly fostered by, you know, our consumer society is that we're empty. And the only way we're going to be fulfilled is by buying all these things, you know. And that's going to fill the emptiness, you know. So, you know, Coke, of course, that's the real thing, right? So if I have a Coke, I'm going to be real, you know. Or if I drink Canadian, I am, you know, I exist.
Yeah,
and it's like this feeling like the only way I'm going to be full is by having things on the outside of myself, and they've convinced us that we're empty, we're not enough.
Yes.
And they've also convinced us that you know, that there's the only cure for that disease is what they're offering, and
yeah.
the bad news from my point of view is. This is like the terrible news. There's no cure for that disease. There's no cure for this disease of emptiness. Mm-hmm. But the good news is the disease doesn't exist.
Mm.
It doesn't exist. We're you know, when we discover our true self, we'll find out that we're not empty. We're actually full.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fullness. There's a wholeness. There's a wholesomeness, there's an aliveness, there's a happiness that's already existent there, that's already there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're so busy trying to fill ourselves when we're already full,
mm-hmm.
that what's getting full is all these the landfill sites of all the stuff that we really didn't need in the first place.
That's
yeah.
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it is craziness.
It is.
It is.
So, you know, the solution is really to find oneself, to find
yeah.
out who we really are, instead of trying to you know, get it on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's a TED Talk on happiness. There's probably quite a few, but there's one that I've watched about 20 minutes long, and this gentleman and his colleagues have been studying happiness for about 2 or 3 decades.
And oh, yeah.
His findings are very interesting, and he's ended up working with governments, with corporations, etc., because they want to understand, especially government levels, why does the public do this or do that? And especially around investments, he was talking about at one point. But he gave this little quiz. He said, a year later, who do you think would be happier, the person who won $1 million the year before or the person who became a paraplegic the year before? And, of course, you know, you hear the audience and they're all murmuring with each other. And then he says, the result may surprise you. He said, in the studies they've actually done, most often it's the paraplegic who a year later is happier.
Yeah.
And he said the understanding of that is the comparison that most people have, almost everybody, for their degree of happiness is the preceding 1 to 3 months, 3 months being the maximum. So they don't think back a year. If the paraplegic's life is better now than it was a month or up to 3 months ago, then they're quite happy. But often for the person who won the $1 million, they're having less and less money, and now they're looking at the prospect of going back to work.
There's yes. another aspect to that, though, Richard, is that the paraplegic has lost everything and through losing everything has found himself.
Possibly.
Yes.
The person who won the lottery just got a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, you know, talking about this because I'm reminded of a friend of mine who did one of my retreats and the coming home retreat, and he had awakened to his true self. He knew who he was, and he was a martial arts teacher, and he got in a very serious accident near Duluth and basically kind of cracked open his head on a motorcycle accident.
Mm.
And he was in a coma for 3 weeks, and he was told that he would never be a paraplegic.
Mm.
And he didn't believe it. He didn't believe that was the case. And so he decided he was going to heal himself. And he over about 5 or 6 years, he gradually regained the use of his limbs. His short-term memory came back. For a while he couldn't see. He couldn't taste. He couldn't detect anybody's emotions. But all of that started to come back. And about 8 years later, I talked to him. I talked to him throughout the time. And I said, "How you doing, Mitz?" And he said, "Oh, doing great. I just entered a martial arts contest in North America, and I won the North American martial arts fighting. This is like full contact."
Wow.
And here's a man who was supposed to be a paraplegic.
Yes.
And so I asked him, like, what was it? You know, what was the thing that really helped you? And he said that I knew inside who I was.
Mm.
And I knew that my true self was not a paraplegic.
Mm.
I knew that I was already complete and whole within.
Yeah.
And so I tried to work towards that was the main, you might say, template for his health. And he just said, I kept visualizing myself whole and complete. And that sense of himself became more and more accentuated.
Mm-hmm.
As he began to heal himself. And I think sometimes that, you know, I'm just theorizing that that's what may bring, you know, you talked about the people in the Holocaust that survived and ended up being healthy after, is that experience may have led them to awaken to their true self rather than lose themselves. And sometimes this awakening experience happens in war. It happens in deep suffering. It just doesn't happen on, like, meditation retreats. Sometimes it can happen in very serious circumstances like that.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, that's not the only path.
Yeah. Like, I certainly wouldn't recommend that people go to a suffering retreat to find out who they are.
It would be interesting to post that and see how well attended it was.
Yeah,
that's right.
Just posting.
So I'm wondering if maybe should we open it up to people for questions, or what do you think?
I would think exactly that. Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, so go ahead. Anyone have a question, pop up and take the floor.
Well, Russell, either we've lost everybody or you've given such a thorough exploration.
Well, was there anything else on the agenda there that of questions that you wanted to, that I didn't cover?
I do have another one, actually.
Yeah.
I want you to solve a riddle for me, and that is, what is the one thing that changes everything but doesn't change itself?
It's the true self. It's the who we really are. We're always the true self is always itself. It's never any different. It's always kind of eternally there within us. But it has the capacity, when we tap into the power of our true self, it has the power to change anything. It's where, all our creative ideas come from. It's where our motivation comes from. It's where our love comes from, where our divine love comes from. It's where our awareness comes from. It's the true power that is behind any change in our life.
Uh-huh.
And dwelling within the true self is also free choice. So anytime we make a choice, that's coming from the true self.
Yeah.
We can often ask the true self. One of the ways of accessing who we really are is, you might say, asking questions or self-inquiry. Like I'll often, when I'm in a difficult time in my life and I don't know what to do, I don't know what choice to make, or it's just so difficult, I just feel like giving up. I'll often ask questions of myself, and I'll say, how can it be easier than this? Or how can it be better than this? If I knew what to do, what would that be?
Mm-hmm.
And so those kind of questions then access the true self, and out of that will come creative answers, directions. There may be coincidences or maybe synchronicity that will happen that will give us the direction or the answer to go in. And so you might say the true self is the center of the wheel,
mm-hmm.
and everything else is on the outside of the wheel. And if we have a strong center or a strong true self, then everything else in the wheel will tend to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we access the true self, it can motivate us, it can move us, and it can change our lives. So it's the one thing that can change anything, but in itself doesn't change itself.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So why don't you spend a few moments talking about your book, Awakening the Guru You. And I know there's people on the call who, you know, have read it, but there are also many who have not. So if you could talk a little bit about the book, what it's intended for, how it came about, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk about where people can access it, of course.
Yeah. So the book has come out of, you might say, spiritual experience I had many years ago. Of what's really going on in life. And it's something that I call co-evolution. And the experience is that we are it. Every one of us is it. We're all that universal essence. We're all the universal. We're our God. Everyone is that it. But we all exist in universal, a universal form of that.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, the God in me, the God that is me is relating to the God that is you. And as I relate to you, communicate, what happens is I become more conscious and more able to be who I really am in life. So it's like there's this co-evolution that's happening all the time. And it happens every time we communicate and relate to one another.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is about communicating that direct experience, talking more about it, and about how we can become more conscious and more wiser in life employing this method. So it's a method that I use on a number of my workshops where people sit across from one another and one person listens and the other person asks a question. And and then people come to greater awareness and insight. So part of the book is describing that whole process, and there's about like 144 insight questions that people can use in the process, or they can just ask themselves that will lead them to a greater understanding. The other part of the book is I talk about you know, the nature of the spiritual path, what is awakening, what is enlightenment, what are the pitfalls on the spiritual path, what actually is the spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that are not spiritual experiences that sometimes people think are.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talk about, you know, if you want to, what I call rent a guru for a little while, you know, what to look for in a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And also how to become what I call a conscious spiritual seeker. So, you know, so how you can avoid, like, getting entrapped by, you know, spiritual teachers, and how you can take responsibility for getting the most out of the spiritual path.
Mm.
And so that's a lot about what the book is about, and a lot of it comes from my own experience of you know, being a seeker, being a teacher, and also about 10 or 11 years of running a spiritual retreat center, where I met lots and lots of teachers and facilitators, and I got to observe and also participate in many workshops. So I got a real good radar of, you know, what's cultish and entrapping, and what is really liberating. So all that wisdom is in that book for people to partake of, and they can get it off my website. It's $20, and also send another gift with that. And as well, there's a free download on my website called The Independent Seeker's Guide.
Yes.
So people can, if they go on my website, Awaken the Guru in You, they can get that free download.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
An area where they can subscribe for your newsletter as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also, like tonight, if people are interested, I'm offering a half price on something I do called clearing, which is one-to-one work. And that one-to-one work is designed to help dissolve or a lot of stuckness that we have in life to getting what we want. So a lot of that stuckness might be, you know, negative beliefs or decisions that we make in life that don't work,
yeah,
or karma, lack of forgiveness, guilt. Clearing is about clearing that away so that who you really are can show up more in life. So I usually charge $100 an hour for those sessions. Uh-huh. So if anybody's interested, they could just send me an email, and I'm giving this sessions away for $50 an hour.
Awesome.
It's a half price.
Yes. So I did put that in my newsletter, and so for everybody, that's awakentheguruinyou.com, and you can find out about his clearing sessions, the book, The Independent Seeker's Guide. What else is on there? Retreat.
Yeah, there's all kinds of all kinds of blogs on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's other retreats that I do as well. So people can just browse around there, take a look around.
Lots of information.
Yeah.
So there's a coming home retreat coming up in May. And, you know, perhaps we could talk about that for a few moments, because that's actually
sure, called sure. Retreat. So that's the retreat that you and Richard have done, and it's, I think it was called the Enlightenment Intensive. It's called the Enlightenment Intensive Around the World, but I've changed the name to Coming Home because I feel that that's what it feels like, more what it feels like when people awaken to their true self. It feels like they've come home. They've
yep.
been lost, and then they come home, and that's what it feels like. So that retreat employs this co-evolution process. So it's a self-inquiry process, but I call it also call it an assisted self-inquiry. So the way it works is people sit across from one another, and one person listens. They don't interrupt. They don't judge. They don't evaluate. They just listen, and they give another person the question, tell me who you are. And that person goes into quiet, and then they communicate to their partner what they came up with. And then it changes over. And as you do that over and over again, interspersed with walks and meals and so forth, what happens is you start to, what happens is a lot of these illusions or false ideas about yourself start to surface, you know, past experiences, and they start to get dissolved. And at some point on the retreat's four days long, there can be this spontaneous awakening. It's just like the lights go off, you suddenly know who you are, you come alive within your body. Sometimes it's almost like feeling that you're reborn, but you're not reborn as somebody else. You're kind of reborn as who you really are. And it's a very profound, powerful experience. These experiences are written about in, like, spiritual texts. You can read about them in ancient and modern spiritual texts. The only thing difference is that they don't take months or years to have. They can actually happen in 2 to 4 days. So the next one is May 14th, starting in the evening. That's a Thursday. And then runs to May 18th. In the afternoon, and that runs at the Ecology Retreat Center, which is near Orangeville. It's one of my favorite retreat centers in the Hockley Valley. It's actually part of the Niagara Escarpment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of, I'd say it's the premium thing that I do, the thing that I like to do the most. I just get great joy out of seeing people kind of falling off their seats laughing when they discover who they are. It's such a joyful experience. Yeah.
It is a fascinating process to go through, to be sure. And you know, from a you know, my own personal experiences, you know, and what I was exploring. To me, it doesn't matter, you know, how far along a person seems to be in their path. It's always good to take it back to basics.
Yes.
Good to revisit that.
Yes.
And for me, it was personally very, very profound, very rewarding. The last one I did, last retreat I did was fascinating for me because suddenly felt like I was watching life as a movie, and it became very funny watching people take things so seriously. And I thought, what is the purpose?
Yeah.
What is this purpose? What is the? Why am I sitting here in this staff meeting going, oh, okay, and I'm wearing this role in this staff meeting, and
yes.
Why is everybody taking this so seriously? And you know, and I had a hard time not laughing through the meeting because it was just, oh my God, it became very surreal. And I went, I think I need to go do another EI, another enlightenment.
Yes.
And explore. What is this? So, yeah, I did have an unusual question with that one, and that is, you know, what is purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really about what is the purpose of all this? Why do we wear these titles? Why do we...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a really, really good exploration for me. And, you know, to get to the deepest heart of it all. Oh, it's really profound. So there's, I guess what I wanted to point out for people is that there are different questions, different modes of exploration. So, you know, who am I? You know, what am I? And who is another? What is love? You know, these are some of the questions people explore to great depth, and it is very profound.
Mm-hmm.
So I am doing another process next week. I got to tell you about this one. Because it's a little unusual, you know, compared to what I've normally done. And so next weekend, I'm actually going with some Indigenous elders and folks down near Havelock, and I'm doing a vision quest, which is focusing on one question. So there's some similar threads here, focusing on a question, something that I'm seeking, and what I want to do for me. I haven't quite formulated all of it, exactly what my question is when I go, but there's a lot of ceremony involved, you know, going into the sweat lodge and everything, and the idea is I'm going to spend 4 days, 4 nights, alone in a little shelter that I've built for myself in the woods. No food, no water, and until I have my vision.
That's intense.
I can have a vision. So I'm doing that next week. And, you know, Richard and I have been going to teachings on most Friday nights with these folks down in Peterborough. And it's been quite a fascinating journey. So we've been in teachings in preparation for this. For this part of the journey. And I've often talked about my enlightenment intensive experiences. I'm drawing parallels between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to come of that. It's, you know, some of the similarities that have happened have been that, you know, My ego's played some tricks on me and, you know, done things to try and talk me out of going. And
yeah, it'll certainly do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll certainly do that, and the ego has this great capacity to sound like it's God speaking.
Yes,
and,
it does.
And people are so fooled by the ego thinking it's you know, mm-hmm. our intuition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had people sometimes call me up a few days before the workshop and say, oh, I think God's telling me I shouldn't go. And I say, well, what happened? Well, I just went out. I went out and I ate a lot of chocolate. Now I'm feeling really sick.
So God told you chocolate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but, you know, that sounds really wonderful what you're doing. Like, I really commend you. It certainly takes a lot of courage. But, you know, the more you kind of face yourself, sometimes, you know, we think there's like a monster inside of us. And, you know, the minute we kind of turn around and face that, it turns out to be like a paper tagger. It's nothing.
Yeah.
And yet we have been so afraid of it. And often it's just this experience or this decision. Okay, yeah, I'm going to face that paper tagger. And there's all kinds of ways up the mountain. Certainly, you know, the coming home retreat is one way. The native spiritual path is a beautiful path. I've done many sweat lodges myself, and people will find that there is a perennial wisdom that people will get to. There is a universal truth that people will arrive at, often with many different paths.
Mm-hmm.
So, best of luck in this. God be with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't think God will make me eat a pile of chocolate first. Although, I can remember the first Enlightenment Intensive I went to, that was just over 6 years ago now. It's been that long, Russell.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And Richard was going to be at that intensive, and I developed these flu-like symptoms, and that was it. Now I can't go.
Oh, okay.
And Richard was talking to me on the phone, and he said, well, you know, sometimes, you know, the ego is, you know, going to act up and, you know, cause all of these issues for you, and, you know, might even cause you to be sick.
Yeah.
I'm sick. I'm seriously sick. I can't go now. And I can't remember what exactly it was he said, but I...
Well, I made a comment about, consider the possibility that this is your resistance to facing something that you don't know.
Ah, yes, that's what you said.
Something along that line.
Something along those lines, yeah. Anyway, but there was a piece of truth in something Richard was saying to me, and I went, And I said, I've been too busy, and I'm too sick, and I haven't had time to read my book that's called Alan Carr's Easy Stop Smoking, because I knew I had to give up cigarettes to go there, and so therefore, because I finished reading that book, I can't go. So I had all these things dreamed up, and the bottom line was, that was when I quit smoking.
Yeah.
And whatever it was, that was the successful point for me quitting smoking, because I had tried to work. And the difference that time was that I never did finish that book. I smoked my last cigarette the morning I left for Orangeville from North Bay, and I gave my cigarettes away, and I got into a vehicle and off I went.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have withdrawal. I didn't have any problems with it. I was so focused on what I was doing there that I was perfectly fine. And whatever it was that, you know, the pattern or whatever it was that I had, that I was addicted to cigarettes, I clearly blasted through it, because the next time I saw somebody smoking a cigarette, I thought, that's the weirdest looking thing.
That's
really
great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's I've just seen this pattern over and over again in not only my life but other people's lives. Is sometimes things get difficult, And, often things get difficult and we stop just before the miracle can happen. And if we just took another step, take a few more steps when it gets difficult and keep going, there's a breakthrough. We're hitting something hard because it needs to be broken through.
Uh-huh.
And, sometimes there's this new age aphorism, well, if it doesn't come easy, it wasn't meant to be. To be honest, I think that's bullshit. And
I think you're right.
So many people are kind of suffering from regret later on in life because they didn't take that extra step.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's what we need to do often when things get difficult, is just keep going a little bit longer. And make it happen.
Yeah.
There's magic on the other side.
There is magic on the other side. And my smoking and my flu-like symptoms and, were all a part of that, trying to hide me from my paper tiger. I like that paper tiger.
Yeah.
And when it got down to it, I knew. There was a part of me that knew I was going to go through such profound change that I was resisting it, and I did. My life changed. Everything was different after.
Yeah.
It just was, so, yeah.
Shall we find out if anyone has any comments or questions again now?
Yeah.
We'll try that again?
Mm-hmm. If anyone does, just speak up.
Well, I guess we must be covering things to the satisfaction, ideally, of those listening.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, was it?
So, something, and because my ego enjoys a good stroke every now and again, too, so just so everybody knows, my name's in the back of Russell's book.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, I have to, I was hoping that we would get to me acknowledging you, actually, Monica. You were the one that inspired me to write the book. Actually, I did a reading with you, and this is impressive you are as a psychic is. I went away to Belize for a bit of a vacation. You know, it's below Mexico. And you said that one of the things that would happen there would be I'd be inspired to write a book. And I had not, in my wildest dreams, thought I was ever going to write a book in my life. It just never occurred to me. And when I was there, I was up on this pyramid, and I had this something shifted in me, and when I came down from the pyramid, I saw how our basic problem with religion and politics is that everything is concentrated at the top. It's like there's our religious structures are all composed like in a pyramidal shape. You know, there's the Pope, and then there's the Cardinal and the Bishop, and it goes down the line. And so at the bottom, we're getting all this dogma, we're getting all this kind of pre-digested belief. And in actual fact, the way life is, it's more like nature, that things are all evolving together. And I kind of looked in nature, into the jungle, and all of a sudden this word coevolution occurred to me, and I said, wow, that's the way consciousness is evolving. We're all evolving together. And then I started to realize, holy man, like that whole concept is something that I'm already doing. I'm already leading workshops based on that concept. And I said to myself, hey, I got to write a book on this. And then I remembered, one day later, I thought, Monica told me I was going to write a book.
Thought I was making that stuff up.
Yes, I just started to write, and I thought I was just going to write a manual, but then it evolved into a book. And, you know, so I have to thank you for having the audacity to, out of the blue, just say something so, you know, something that I had never thought of, and I don't know how you thought of it, but obviously you were seeing something there for me, and so I really respect your abilities.
Thank you, and I respect yours as well. And I saw you writing a book, and I saw it coming out, so literally. I have visions when I'm doing readings. I see things. Yeah, I hear voices, too. I don't take meds for that.
Otherwise, you'd probably stop hearing them.
Yeah, I'd stop hearing voices.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. Well, you know, Richard was going to say something. We'll let him talk.
I find it very intriguing how it seems to me there's a couple of things in terms of messages. One is the way it's delivered, and the not only the manner in which it's spoken, but the words themselves, and even more, the consciousness of the person delivering that. And the other is timing. And it's somewhat connected with you writing a book. I was told by about three different intuitives that I would be moving from the house that I was living in Toronto, and I'd lived there for about a quarter century at that point, and I'm like, nah, I like it here, I don't see why I would move, blah, 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 and it's like, no. So this unfolded over about a year, approximately, three different individuals. And then there was one more person I was in conversation with, and it came up. I didn't bring it up. He brought it up and said, I see you moving. And my comment was, yes, you know, I've been told that by three other people. I don't see it happening. I have resistance around it. No, I don't think so. He said, oh, just a minute. And he paused for quite a while, and then he finally said, well, I see you deciding that you want to move, and then you'll move. And about a month later, it popped up. Well, I think I'm done here. I don't have any more juice being here, and it's time to move. So then I started the preparations. So I find it really interesting what it's not just the message, but all the various components that come together, and then it clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, in your case, it appears that, you know, Monica was the only one, and she told you once, and then. But there had to be a shift in you before there was, before there was the sense of that being in alignment with you.
Yeah, and I think the value of that reading was when that shift occurred, something drew me back to your reading saying I would write a book, and I wonder if I would have even have had the idea of writing a book when that shift occurred, if Monica wouldn't have said that I would.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some way, maybe I might have written the book, but it might have kind of come later, you know, 6 months or a year or 2 years later. But I think by Monica intuiting that I was going to write a book, she actually speeded up the time when I began to write it. So there's a real value in, I think, in intuitive readings, and is that, you know, there's so many choices we can make in life, and if an intuitive says, okay, well, here's a choice to consider, and this might be a direction you might want to go in, then I think there's a tendency you would take that direction sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that co-evolution.
Yeah, that was co-evolution.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah, that was co-evolution. That's really cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's happening all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Was there something else you wanted to ask, or because I have another question?
No, you go ahead, Richard.
Okay. There's a friend of ours we stay in loose touch with, and he's recently come back into contact with us, and he's a very interesting gentleman, and he does a lot of deep spiritual work, especially a lot of breath work, and part of what he was talking about in our conversations this year was how quite a number of his friends and family and people he knows, in fact, almost all of them, seem to be in meltdown this year,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, that which was in their lives before that seemed stable, marriages, careers, homes, etc., their sense of who they are in the world, that pretty much all of these people are finding to various degrees that there's a meltdown going on where
mm-hmm.
where they're losing the old stability, the old patterns, the old systems, the old ways of being, the old stuff that seemed like it was a fixture in their lives is coming up, falling away, and I'm wondering what you've been experiencing this year in comparison to other years.
Well, you know, I see that happening, I'm sure there might be, you know, we could say there's certain esoteric influences like astrological influences and so forth, and you know, I know I've certainly been through that this year, and like, you know, for myself, you know, just personally, I'm going through a period where I'm taking time off from a relationship that I'm in. I don't think we're separating, or we might, but you know, it becomes apparent that you know, when these things happen, and sometimes they're loss of jobs, they're loss of a relationship, there might be loss of health. When these things happen, we can really fall apart. And sometimes that, you know, if we let the falling apart happen, there's a reorganization or there's a falling together. And the deeper part of it is that we may go deep within ourselves. It sometimes when these difficult situations happen, there's nothing left for us on the outside, and so the only thing that is left is ourself. And you know, spending time with ourself, you know, asking, you know, what is it that I need? Who am I? What are my abilities? Getting more in touch with one's inner nature and becoming more secure in that. And so when, you know, everything on the outside becomes insecure, the only place we can find our security is within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that may be where it's going. And so people are almost being forced to access that spirituality within themselves. To find that there's something more enduring within themselves that will help them get through what is not so enduring on the outside.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that might be what's really going on. And, you know, it's often a birthing. And a birthing, of course, can be very difficult, you know. You can come out head first, or you come out feet first, or you know, you can come out anyway.
Come out,
you know,
green.
All balled up and tangled up, and but it's you know, it could very well be that what we're birthing is our self, our true self. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Like, I definitely am finding that this year is a crisis year, more than almost any time, more consistently than any time that I can remember in my life on so many different fronts. And it seems to me that this is part of what's going on individually and collectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain factions associated with the old systems are trying to stay in their assumed positions of power, and that, you know, this is it. It's all coming apart, as it were, at the
yeah.
And this is all part of the individual and collective birthing going on.
Yeah. And there's one more thing I'd like to say on this I think is really important, is that as we go through this birthing, it's really important that we don't do it alone.
Yeah.
That I think it's all what it's also forcing us to do is to reach out and to find help and support from others, and almost like this program, you know, this program you have here is a way of people coming together and in
yeah.
a commonality and exploring together. And I think, the old paradigm is kind of, the wild frontier and individuality. And
yeah.
I think there's a new paradigm, which is going within, you know, having to do it by ourselves, but we don't have to do it alone. And so there's this kind of individual going within, but also forming a collective.
Yeah.
And I think that's really an important thing that we should truly cultivate,
mm-hmm.
is that in this process of difficulty, is that we go through it together. And
mm-hmm.
there's a great a coming together and a great unity. And a strength that we'll find in the collective, in the group, that gives us our own inner strength as well. And it's not codependency; it's more like this, you know, interdependence.
Yeah.
That that we develop strength from.
And I feel a co-awakening, a co-evolution, you know, going on as well.
Yeah.
It's part of what I like with Michael Lettellinger talking about the Ubuntu movement, what's the catchphrase with it? Contributionism.
Contributionism, yeah.
Contributionism, where it's not about, you know, how much stuff can you gather, whether that stuff is items or power, control. It's not about that. It's about what is fulfilling for you in contributing to society, to others. And that as we start to move in that direction, then it changes the whole orientation of society and how we're operating.
Mm-hmm.
So there was...
Yes.
I heard various, you know, people appear to have left the call because you hear the little bong.
Little bongs,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I cut off there, Russell.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Back to you, Monica.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the time, though. We're coming up on 8:45, so we've been on this call for a while. So something I wanted to mention to people, though, is that today we sent out a newsletter for those who haven't seen it yet, and we launched out Russwood Retreat. So it just so happens today is Russ Day. Richard's father's name was Russell as well, so that's why
we
call
wow.
it Treat. So
yeah,
it's a,
part of my fondness for you, Russell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Family thing, you know.
It's a Russell
thank
kind
you.
Of, so we have you for Mystical Monday, and then we sent out the newsletter and posted on Facebook. So if anybody wants to peek on our website, toheartofunity.com, and look under the tab Russwood Retreat. We're now renting out the cottage that's on the same property that we're on, a nice secluded little cottage. And so it's a wonderful place to come and be in nature and hiking trails and, you know, campfire lake and to also heal and partake of our services here if you so choose to. So, you know, have a look at that, and if you choose to share that with others, that's great. And again, to visit Russell's site, awakentheguruinyou.com. Check out his book and clearing on for half price to try to help you to awaken the guru in you through clearing.
Yeah. And, yeah, so people, if they want that free session or that half price session, just email me. There's the email contact form on the website, or they can just email me at Russell with two L's at awakentheguruinyou.com. And then there's also the free download of the Independent Seeker's Guide that's there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another very useful tool for folks to have. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, Russell. Is there anything else that you wanted to comment on, or does anyone have a question? Well, seems there's no questions. Do you have anything else you wanted to comment about, Russell?
I just wanted to thank you so much for inviting me on to the call, onto the show. I certainly have learned some things from you too, and as I say, sometimes I'll say something that comes out of the blue for myself, and I learn something from myself.
Yes.
And
uh-huh.
It's, you know, so good to, you know, let people know more about what's available that they can explore.
Absolutely.
And I just really thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's definitely our pleasure to have a chance to explore with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's wonderful.
The recording again.
Wonderful. And so, yes, this the recording of tonight's call is going to go up on our website on our teleclass page, heartofunity.com, under the heading teleclass. And I'll put a link for Russell's website on there as well so people can easily find him. And, yeah, so thank you so much, Russell, and thank you
everyone. You're welcome.
For chiming in and being a part of our discussion. And for those listening down the road at some point, it's great to have you there, too.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Hey.
You're welcome, and have a wonderful retreat next month.
Oh, I will do, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Those lucky participants are going to have quite a time, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Well, blessings to you both.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to whatever comes in the future of talking to you again.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.